back at some of the most classic toys of all time, from the Light Bright to G.I. Joe, from Mousetrap to the Easy Bake Oven. It's easy to get nostalgic about all the cool toys we had or always wanted when we were kids. And our next guest has written an extensive account of all those classic toys.
And we want to hear from you. What was your favorite toy growing up? Or maybe your kid's favorite toy now? Give us a call, 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email us your favorite toy at talk@WPR.org.
Christopher Byrne is also known as a toy guy. He's the content director for TimeToPlayMag.com and the author of Toy Time, from Hula Hoops to He-Man to Hungry Hungry Hippos. Christopher, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. Nice to be with you.
Why do you think that these toys that we had when we were children have such a powerful emotional, you know, connection for us even now?
Well, you know, there's, you know, our childhoods are such formative times, and the impressions that we get, both good and bad, are really, you know, we carry them through our lives. And toys are just one of the things that either bonded us as a culture, bonded us to our friends, or certainly gave us a chance to have, you know, express ourselves, have new experiences. And, of course, there was always that thrill of hoping Santa Claus would bring you the one thing that you wanted, and you got it.
Well, growing up, what was your favorite toy?
You know, my favorite was always Matchbox cars, and I still have all my Matchbox cars in my office. I had to keep them away from my brothers somehow, so I've traveled with them all these years. But, you know, the reason I loved them was you could organize them, you could sort them, you could have battles with them. It was really a springboard for the imagination, and really, like all the best toys, those toys came to life with the imagination, and that's really what makes them special, because you remember those experiences. The piece of plastic or metal in this case is sometimes not as relevant as the experience you had with it that made the impression on you.
Why do you think it is? I mean, looking, I was reading your book, and toy after toy, I thought, oh, Light Brights, oh, Barbies, everyone, you know, seemed to have a memory. Lots of them did. Why do they go away when they're so well loved by so many people? What makes them sort of get retired?
Well, certain things sort of reach the end of their natural life. But if you look at Barbie, Barbie is now 54 years old, and she's still around. She's still, you know, the largest single toy brand in the world. Certain things, like, say, the Kenner Give a Show projector has really gone the way of you know, slide projectors not being that big of a thing we see in our culture right now. Light Bright is around as an app. So a lot of these things, they really are classic play that find new expression in the technologies and the different media that we have today. But that classic play experience, I've created something, or I've pretended something, or I've made something up where nothing existed, that's really the essence of play, and that just doesn't change.
Well, you've got a chapter on dolls, and of course, one of the most famous dolls is the Barbie doll.
Right.
And no, you know, some people think that the Barbie is a ridiculous idea of how a woman should look. I played with them growing up. I guess I'll fess up to that, although I did kind of mash worms with them and other unfortunate things. So I don't know if I played with them like they were little fashion models. But what do you think about the Barbie and what the Barbie's place is in American culture?
Well, Barbie is certainly one of the most iconic toys. And for little kids, you know, they always saw pretty. They didn't see a more sophisticated or mature idea of gender identity or womanhood. That's something that adults have projected onto this inert lump of polyvinyl chloride as they've grown up. My joke has always been, Barbie's shaped like she is because her clothes are a tube. You stick her in the tube, you have a nice place to rest her dress on while you snap the back at her neck. And really, that's how a four-year-old perceives it. You know, a four-year-old sees pretty. They don't see any of the other things that have been applied to Barbie later on. And Barbie's had to keep evolving. Barbie, in 1959, she was the original teenage fashion model, and that was one option. Her other option was bride. Today, she's had more than 130 careers. She was brought back really to life in the early 70s by Jill Barad and John Ammerman with the We Girls Can Do Anything. And she's just stayed this sort of totem, if you will, that we project our fantasies onto. So good or bad, whether you're a child projecting being a princess or a grown-up girl onto it, or somebody who has unresolved issues that you're projecting onto it as well.
Well, we want to know about you. What is your favorite classic toy that you had growing up, and why did you love it? You can reach us at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. And let's go to the phones now. We've got a caller on the line, Denise in Hillsboro. Hi, Denise.
Yes, hi.
What's your favorite toy?
Well, I said it had to be a tie between Dressy Bessie and Weeble Wobbles.
Ah, I haven't heard of either of those. Tell us about those, would you, Christopher?
Well, Dressy Bessie was go ahead.
That you could learn how to do buttons on and tie her shoes. And it was like a flat doll. She was about 12 inches high. She had like yellow hair that was yarn and pigtails. And she came with, like, a raincoat that was green with black polka dots and yellow galoshes. And she had a vest on underneath. They had the buttons on. And I just remember playing with her all the time.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Back in the 70s.
Christopher, what about you? Do you remember these?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Weebles also, they came out in 1971, and they wobbled, but they didn't fall down. They were egg-shaped items, and they had little characters on them, and they're still actually made. Hasbro still makes them. And it's just the sort of fascination of you could drop it from any level, and it would end up right side up. I think that was sort of, it's very simple, but very fascinating to a 3 or 4 year old.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Denise. And let's go next to Andrew in Beloit. Hey, Andrew.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good. How about you?
Not bad. Just hearing, thanks for having me on, but I enjoy the show.
Thank you.
I guess from my childhood, I was a big Lego fan. I think talking about the Ultimate in Imagination toys, they were pretty good. And I feel like they helped me out in my adult life. You know, once I started taking mechanical things apart, I realized, oh, it's just like Legos. If I put it together wrong, I can take it apart and put it back together again. And I don't know.
Actually, yeah.
A lot of fun.
Lots of people. You know who else shares that point of view, Andrew, is our assistant news director, Noah Ovshinsky, who waxed rhapsodic about Legos earlier, because they are fabulous. That you're right. You can just do so many creations. The only downfall, of course, is if you step on them. Christopher, real quickly, what is special about Legos?
Well, Legos, exactly that. I mean, it comes from the Danish for play well, and it really is something that's limited only by your imagination. You can pick that up at any time in your life and find it. You know, little kids, older kids, they can find something to do, because it really is sort of the ultimate self-expression. And there's something very satisfying about putting those together and feeling them stay together so well and build whatever you can imagine.
Well, we're talking right now with Christopher Byrne about some of the coolest toys of all time. And we want to know what yours is. Maybe it's a classic toy from the past that's not around anymore, like the Simon or the Light Bright. What is it that you remember fondly? You can reach us at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234, or send your email to talk@wpr.org.
You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert, and we're picking up our conversation now with Christopher Byrne about the coolest toys of all time. He's the author of the book called Toy Time, From Hula Hoops to He-Man to Hungry, Hungry Hippos. And we're taking your calls and your votes for the coolest toys at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page. And let's go back to the phones right now. We have Amanda on the line from Sheboygan. Hey, Amanda.
Hi, how are you?
Okay, how are you?
I'm great.
What is your vote?
I can't say it's a cool toy, but it was probably my favorite toy. I wore two of them out, actually. And I don't know what they're really called. We called them clacker balls, and they were like...
I love clacker balls.
Yes, they are awesome.
I'm with you. I still have mine.
Wand art.
Uh-huh. What did you say?
Do you really?
Yeah.
I'm sure they went the way of lawn darts, because, like, right. I was... they're these great resin balls, and a lot of times they have, like, glitter the size of a pool ball with rickety string that, you know, after a while breaks, and hopefully you're not too wild with it when it does break. And they would, you just kind of flick your wrist, and they clack together, and they make the coolest sound,
yeah.
And they're great for giving your little brother concussion.
You know, they were so satisfying. I thought they were therapeutic. I think that's why I kept them, because there was something sort of zen or hypnotic about clanging them together. What do you know about those guys, Christopher?
Well, they would be classified today in the "what were they thinking" column. But they were very, very popular. I mean, and like the yo-yo and the boomerang before it, it began its life as a weapon. And they were used to knock small animals unconscious, as you know, in hunting. So they're fairly old, but they became toys. They first became toys, I don't know, around in the late 60s, early 70s, and it was just a tremendous fad. Ultimately, of course, schools banned them, which of course made them even more alluring. But yeah, it's one of those, if you whack your finger once or twice and it hurt.
Yeah, I mean, I can see that they had destructive possibilities, but they were, I don't know, there was something very cool about them in a weird way. Well, thanks so much, Amanda, for bringing that memory back. And I want to ask you, Christopher, about, you know, some of the toys that were to help kids get creative. And some of these have stood the test of time. What about the Etch-A-Sketch?
Well, the Etch-A-Sketch is great. It was first introduced in 1960. It came from France, where it was called the Magic Crayon. And it was done by Ohio Art. And, it, you know, if you remember it, it's two knobs that drag a stylus vertically and horizontally. And essentially what it does is it scrapes away aluminum powder that holds on by static electricity to the inside of a screen. And then you could turn it over and shake it, and you would start all over again. And kids would spend hours on it, because part of the fun of it was also trying to see, well, if you turn both knobs at once, you could kind of get it to curve. So it was really just, it was magic. Or it seemed to be magic, and it was certainly a lot of fun. And it was actually one of the last toys to still be fully manufactured in the United States before manufacturing moved to China in the 90s.
Okay, but my thing is, Christopher, can you actually draw anything that resembles anything with these? I always wondered if there were people who were Etch-A-Sketch maestros who could draw amazing things that would blow your socks off. Mine always, into this day, my kids have an old one. It just looks like scribbles.
Right, it does look like scribbles, but that was part of the fun. But there are people who can do... who can do amazing things with it. I think you can go onto Ohio Art's website and you can see some of the creations that people have made. And they make these amazing things, and then they take the back off it and knock all the powder out, so it's going to preserve it. But you would be stunned at what some of the people do. It's kind of like, I don't know, making mandalas or something. It takes a lot of patience and sort of zen-like concentration.
What is the website again?
Ohio Art. I'm not sure exactly
Ohio
what their website
Art.
Is, but they're the manufacturer, the OhioArt.com.
Okay, excellent. All right, let's go back to the calls now. Duffy is joining us from Delavan. Hey, Duffy.
Hi.
Hi. What is your vote for best toy?
My Cabbage Patch Kid.
Ah, yeah.
She was my favorite. I still have her. And I remember that Christmas, that was like the hot item, and my parents had to go, I don't even know how many stores they had to go to find her for me for Christmas morning.
But what does yours look like?
I have one of the preemies, and she's got blue eyes and blonde hair, and now I actually have a little girl with blue eyes and blonde hair that plays with her.
So. That's excellent.
Passed her on to my daughter.
Yeah, the Cabbage Patch craze, that was a really big deal. I remember that it made the national news, the run on Cabbage Patch Kids. What was so special about them, Christopher?
You know, I think it was, well, Xavier Roberts first created them in 1976 when he was an art student. And then Coleco, which had been known for air hockey tables, bought them, and it became a phenomenon in the holidays of 1983. And we heard stories back then of people flying to England to get them and paying all kinds of money for it. It was one of those toys that we've seen it again with Tickle Me Elmo and certainly the Power Rangers when they first came out. It sort of makes that leap from the toy industry into the culture at large, and it becomes something everybody wants to have as a badge of saying, here I am, it's 1983, I have the hottest toy right now. And that transcends any kind of play, and it just becomes a kind of craze.
What is it that is the magic ingredient that happens when a toy becomes a superstar like that? Do you know? Is there a formula?
There is no formula. I think if there was a formula, people would be trying to do it all the time. It's one of those things that just sort of translates. Tickle Me Elmo, I know that Brian Gumbel held it in his lap on the Today Show. Rosie O'Donnell had it, you know, with her for most of the show. And it makes that jump from something that just, you know, parents know and kids know to something that the entire culture is buzzing about. And I always joke, it's, you know, it's cheaper than a BMW or a Birkin bag. So you can have the hot thing for a lot less money.
If you can risk those crowds at the store sometimes.
Exactly. And well, now, you know, eBay has really changed a lot of that stuff. You can, you know, you're not lining up at 4 a.m. on a snowy morning in a Toys R Us parking lot. People are finding things on eBay, and already there's some things this year they're paying multiples to get.
Like what?
Well, Doc McStuffins, which is a new show on Disney, and it's a wonderful character. It's a little girl whose mother is a doctor, and so she takes care of her animals, and they come to life when she treats them. And this is very, very popular, and some of the toys from Just Play are already selling out, and people are putting them on eBay for about twice what they would cost at retail.
Wow, that's a nice, going to say racket, but it's a good business opportunity to do that.
Yeah.
So what do you think about these toys when we look back on them? I mean, are toys today as good as toys were? You know, some of these golden era toys that you write about, like Hungry Hippo and Hula Hoops and Etch-a-Sketch, are toys that good now? Are we just sort of blinded by nostalgia?
Well, no, I think toys are very much of their time. So there's wonderful toys that are coming out today. There's wonderful, you know, all of those toys that you just mentioned are still around, by the way. But you get new characters. I mentioned Doc McStuffins. There's also Sophia the First, who's a princess in training. You know, it's new stuff for a new generation. And I think there's lots of great games that are out there. Many of the games that you would recognize, Sorry, Clue, Monopoly, but also new ones like one called Boom Boom Balloon, where it's all about trying not to be the person to pop the balloon on your turn. So it's really the classic play, these classic competitions or, you know, open-ended imaginative play. These things find new expression, but the play itself doesn't really change that much. And where it fits into a child's life doesn't change that much.
All right. Well, Christopher, it's been a lot of fun. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, guys.
We've been talking to Christopher Byrne. He's known as the Toy Guy, and he's the author of the book Toy Time.